I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Valencia always works out of a stretch. The strong right-hander is ready, and he brings it. Fly ball, left center field. Well hit, but it is playable for Happ. He's got it, and the Cubs win the ball game. Core Armstrong crisscrossing behind him. Ian Happ made the catch on the edge of the warning track or just in front of the track. And Pearl Armstrong peeled off and veered out toward the wall. Fell down, but he's okay, and the Cubs are okay, winning this ball game by a score of 2-1.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That was yesterday's Cubs game, yesterday morning's Cubs game. Ended in the afternoon. They started at, 11:45, I believe?
Yeah. Yeah. Zach was on the pregame, and he said good morning.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? But they won that game, and you heard there, kind of fun, that Daniel Palencia gets his first conventional save. Is that how we're terming it? He did well, worked a perfect ninth inning for his first save, and that was the guy that had given up the save and the only loss in that series. So it was a good thing all the way around to see him have his moment. Obviously, Kate Horton pitched a really good game, and they won a 2-1 game. But they, by virtue of the victory yesterday, they get the series win. Down in Florida, and now they are off today heading to Cincinnati.
A lot of things to like about that 2-1 victory, because if you're a Cub fan and you have been paying close attention, as most Cub fans do the last year or so, you fall in love with these prospects. And first it's Cade Horton, drafted 7th overall in 2022, and then Matt Shaw, another first rounder who has been, you know, he has been he's ascended quickly through the Cubs system. He scores a winning run. He steals a base. He's gotten 5 hits in this series. So he is back and I think relaxed and looking more like himself. He contributes. Cade Horton contributes. These prospects have arrived at the major league level and they're contributing to a team that is now 10 games over 500, 50 games in, 30-20, playing 600 baseball. Very good day for the Cubs.
Yes, so we back to the closer, if you will. The closer is hurt. We know that Porter Hodges is on the IL, and you're waiting for him to come back. I don't know what's going on with other closing options, but I think we had settled on Palencia as the guy that was going to do it, and then it fell apart a little bit. But now he's back. And off you go. But, he did not – the reason you like him is because he's got swing and miss stuff, but that's not what happened over the three outs yesterday.
No.
It was three fly balls.
Yeah, they were loud.
It was just
a loud ninth.
Yeah.
Not going to lie.
It was loud.
We talk about his swing and miss stuff because he's got the velocity.
Right.
But the one thing about velocity guys is throw ball hard, hit ball hard. So in an industry that is now consumed with exit velocity, it just stands to reason that if you do make contact with Daniel Palencia's fastball, it's going to go a long way. And so in the ninth inning, there were probably a few Cub fans holding their breath as the ball came off the bat, and it sounded like an extra base hit. And then that final out, as we heard Pat Hughes call it so skillfully, PCA sliding. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And Ian Happ was there. That's good. So, yeah, it wasn't a victory without its moments, but it did also, I think, remind you, if you needed reminded, that the Cubs can win 2-1 games as easily as they can win blowouts. And they've had their share of blowouts. They have 10 games with 10 or more runs, and their offense is off to a historic start. But yesterday, They won a close one.
Yeah, no question about it. Yeah, it's a good thing to have happen. You should be able to win games like that, and you should be able to do okay in Cincinnati, right? You got Matt Boyd on the bump tomorrow, Colin Ray Saturday, and Ben Brown back on Sunday.
You just said sweep.
That's not what I said.
I think you just said sweep.
I said you like to win that series.
Okay.
Do you think that those three names mean sweep?
I think Ben Brown needs a good start.
Yeah, I think so.
I think Ben Brown needs a good start.
But he's needed a good start before, and
yeah,
he got one.
And the pressure was on when Craig Counsell called him out. He responded positively. Matthew Boyd, and Colin Ray have been really bright spots and big surprises, how consistent they have been. Ben Brown, I think, needs to pay attention to what Cade Horton has done in three outings. What Cade Horton has done in three outings has said, I'm good enough to stay here. I want to be here for the duration. I can help you win a division. Ben Brown is also a guy, because of his two-pitch limit, and he needs to develop a third pitch. Until he does, he's a candidate to be in the bullpen. He could be a valuable asset at the back end of the bullpen, an eighth inning guy. Maybe a closer. Don't know. But I think he's got to have a good start Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think that's asking too much. And I think that your assessment is accurate. I think eventually he probably goes back into the bullpen. I'm more so than Cade Horton, I would say. Horton has shown more than Ben Brown. And that might be a harsh assessment, given the fact that we really haven't seen Cade Horton struggle much. So we don't know how he's going to overcome it when it happens. But I got a feeling he looks the part. He looks like he's got a pretty good feel.
Oh, he does look the part.
Yeah, he definitely looks the part.
Can have that kind of command. He carries himself, I don't want to say with a swagger, but certainly an air of confidence.
He carries himself like an old quarterback.
He does. And you know what? All this consternation about whether or not we're going to hear from Caleb Williams, and when will Caleb Williams hear talk. You know what I want to hear from Caleb Williams? Does he remember Cade Horton from Oklahoma? Because Cade Horton was going to walk on the Oklahoma football team. What?
You've gone way too far.
I want to know if Caleb Williams remembers Cade Horton.
Can you imagine a news conference where Cade Horton finally, after everything that's gone down, gets in front of the microphone? Questions, Mr. David raises a hand. Ah, here's the veteran scribe. Let's go to him. He'll ask the important, do you remember Cade Horton?
Okay. But you know what? They were there, I think, at the same time. And Cade Horton was a quarterback for Norman High School. He committed to Oklahoma's baseball team with plans to walk on the football team. And Caleb Williams was there, I think, at the same time. I am much more interested in hearing something I don't know than hearing something from Caleb Williams I already do. I know that he was reluctant to come to the Bears. I know what his dad said. I know all those things. I want to know something I don't know. Do he and Cade Horton have a relationship?
David Hall? David, you're muted.
Sorry about that. Hello, George.
So that was one of the best questions you've ever asked.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to get an answer just as good.
What's Brandon doing today?
He's having some fun. Conference call fun.
You think that would be a bad question to ask Caleb Williams?
I do not think that's a bad question. But to say, that's what I want to know. That's not a good – that is not a very – I mean, I think the whole radio thing's gotten in you a little bit.
Okay,
I think I think the Cubs have gotten you a little too much.
All right.
I just don't think that's the Bears angle we're looking for from Caleb
Would
Williams.
Would you be okay if you were in the room during a press conference, near the end of the press conference?
Sure.
Hey, Caleb, thanks for the input you gave us on things we already knew and confirming in context, all those things. By the way, do you remember Cade Horton from Oklahoma? Did you guys ever hang out together in the gym, in the weight room, whatever?
Yeah, I can see myself as a young man standing in the press room and some wily veteran shows up and decides to end the press conference with that sort of a thing. No, I wouldn't be okay with it. I'd be like, stick to football.
We're not
done yet. Why did you end the interview?
See, that's the way you always approach things. I know you always used to hate those kind of departures from the nuts and bolts and meat and potatoes of the press conference.
I just want to talk football.
I know. You and Bigsy were like, whatever. But I think when you talk about Cade Horton and Caleb Williams, their connection, they're the two best right-handers in town. They share Chicago. They're going to share it for the next 5 to 10 years if things go right.
You might be getting a little carried away.
Okay, why?
because Shane Smith walked a couple guys and then gave up a home run, and then he got then he pitched a perfect game, Gave Shane up Smith. One hit, no walks the rest of the way.
That's right. Shane Smith.
There are other humans in the world.
If not for that first inning.
That's right. Other than that.
Other than
sir,
that first inning.
How did you like the play?
Yeah. All right. Well, it's a quick departure.
No, I'm just joking around. But I think that it would be kind of fun in a different setting where, you know, you weren't interrupting people's livelihood, where you asked a question like that.
I loved that Cade Horton last Friday before his start against the White Sox. No, he didn't say anything, but he was throwing a football around the outfield.
Yeah, he said that said he was going to throw the football. He said he couldn't wait to be able to throw it with Shota, because apparently Shota doesn't mind throwing a football. Did you
really?
Hear that?
That would surprise me.
He said specifically he wants to throw the football with Shota.
Now, I doubt that Shota grew up throwing the football.
I think he definitely didn't.
I know, so
but I think that's
interesting.
Kind of that's why it's a fun thing.
Do you think he can throw a spiral?
I'm guessing he could teach Shota how to throw a better spiral, a tighter spiral.
Yeah, Shota would be.
But if for you to like it, it would have to be a frisbee with like a spectacular catch.
No, I like frisbee football. I do.
We were here the other day, and David let out a "Oh my God, what a catch!" and I like turned what. I'm thinking, who was catching what? I thought it was a baseball.
I think it was Ultimate Frisbee.
That's what it was.
Ultimate Frisbee.
And I was like, "Duh."
Yes. And I think Ultimate Frisbee is much more exciting for me to watch than flag football.
That's fair. I mean, I have no problem with that. Why don't we make that the Olympic sport? Can Justin Jefferson catch a Frisbee? His hand goes up and he just catches the thing flat. You know what I mean? He grabs the entire Frisbee.
That would be
good. Plucks it out of the air.
765 with a relevant question. What happened to Haw?
I think you got out over your skis on a Cade Horton.
Well, I don't think that's an unreasonable question to wonder if Cade Horton and Caleb Williams had a relationship.
How about this? How about somebody like asked Cade Horton, hey, you know, I'm out at batting practice, I saw Cade throwing the football. Hey, did you ever play with Caleb Williams?
That may be a better way to go about
then
the...
Then you get a little backstory.
Yeah, okay.
And then you show
that's
up
good.
And you're like, and then you say, Cade, listen to this. And you play your tape recorder that he can't
Thank
hear.
Thank you. You know, that's good. That's a good request for people on the Cubs beat if they are so inclined and they... Yeah. See Cade Horton on the side in the clubhouse. Maybe Zach could get that done.
Zach's
a man for
time.
All seasons.
Yeah,
he had a really good pregame interview of Cade Horton the other day.
Pity you didn't give him the Caleb question.
He might have asked him about that, but it didn't have enough time to get to it and use it in the pregame show.
Gotcha.
Those pregame interviews are really insightful.
He does a great job.
And they help you if you're a fan of the team and you follow the team. You get some insight when you hear him talk to Zach, and players kind of do feel a good rapport, easy rapport. So, yeah, it's good stuff.
This is funny because we've got a texter who wants to say that that football is broadcast on national television in Japan, but he also says Japan has been playing football since the early, wait for it, 1900s.
That's not true.
The football didn't start here until like... What's it called? 1920 football drive?
1920 football drive. If they were playing
1900s.
Football in Japan before they were playing it in America, I would be shocked.
They have a gridiron tradition second only to the U.S.
Okay.
So they're going to finish with the bronze medal? I say it's Canada.
No, I don't know. I don't know how to handicap the flag football Olympics in 2028. I just know that Arch Manning is going to be the captain for the U.S. team. And
Arch
be
Manning?
Yeah.
I don't know. You ever watch flag football? No offense. But you got to be able to run a quarterback. I don't think he's a running quarterback.
Don't you have to be accurate?
Well, accuracy helps, no question. But, I mean, if you can...
In 3 years, I'm projecting out 3 years.
If you can swivel the hips, Elvis.
Okay.
If you can move the pelvis, Elvis... You got a really good chance of avoiding someone grabbing your flag.
That's a secret. Boy, you're suddenly a flag football expert.
I'm all shook up.
I can't wait for you
to
be added to the NBC team.
I threw that thing half the distance of the goal. I need a cheeseburger. Colonel
Thank you very much.
Yeah. peanut butter sandwich with banana on it.
All right, we're getting off the rails here.
Yes.
What time sorry. Is it? I think I started it. I'm sorry with the Caleb.
You started it.
Caleb Cade comparison. Cade Horton, but I think though. When you talk about Cade Horton and Caleb Williams, their connection, they're the two best right-handers in town. That's not that outrageous of a statement.
Poor Tyson Bagent.
That's who feels insulted by that.
He just sat up. He's like, what the hell did Hall say there?
Shane Smith. Shane Smith's a fine right-hander. Jonathan Cannon. He's got a cannon. And I think.
Look at this. It's called the backtrack. Here's the old defensive back.
I'm backtracking.
Out on the field.
I'm backpedaling. But I think Cade Horton is somebody who showed yesterday why there's so much hope invested in him and why I think he can stay. He can stick around for a while. I hope he does. I hope when Shota comes back, they don't just, do what they did before Cade Horton was brought up. I hope that they reconsider some things and maybe reconfigure the bullpen.
Okay, here we go. Princeton's first football game was in 1869. Yes, I said 1900s. They played against Rutgers. Did you know that that game is considered the first rugby game ever played in the United States and the first soccer game ever played in the United States?
Did not know that.
As well as the first American football game.
Did not know that.
Imagine what that thing looked like.
Oh, my gosh.
Imagine what that goofy game looked like if three different sports are claiming it as their own.
That must have been quite a confusing afternoon.
That's right.
What are we watching?
I don't know. Go back to the...
Now, 1869 was the first football game?
The first, supposedly, the fine gentlemen of Princeton hosted Rutgers. They walked down to the train station, met the other team. They went out for a night of cocktails and pool playing. And the next day, they played the first ever football, soccer, rugby game ever in the United States. So it was all done outside the auspices of the university. It was just a bunch of dudes meeting and having like a giant war game of some sort after getting all liquored up. And now we call it the birth of football.
Yes, okay.
It's the birth of a lot of stuff. And like
that.
I said, I don't know what that must have looked
We've
like.
We've got people texting us Wikipedia entries for the Japanese history with American football.
They apparently would kick human heads around in a circle on battlefields of Europe.
Okay.
And that's how soccer began.
We're going to come back and we're going to refocus with Bruce Levine because
we should talk some baseball.
We're off the rails if we're talking about American football in Japan.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Baseball. Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce asked the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Bruce Levine, and he joins us now in the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Good morning, guys. A win and a loss yesterday for Chicago teams. Where are we going today?
Yeah, I think we're starting with the closer and the fact that they did win a game with Daniel Palencia as the closer, and they had struggled with that earlier in the week, but lo and behold, his second go-round in that role of late serves him with his first conventional close.
I don't think it was – I mean, look, he got the job done. It wasn't pretty.
No.
Three balls hit hard, right? I mean, again, getting this guy used to it, them understanding that he has the best stuff to go out there and dominate there, and then – a young guy learning how to continue to get ahead of the count, throw his breaking ball for a strike, and then being able to get those outs. That's a part of the, you know, equation here to, again, have player development at the end of their bullpen there in a very pivotal role. Some of it is a plan. Some of it is about the attrition of the rest of the relievers, you know, the injuries that have occurred, the work that hasn't gotten done by, you know, some of the guys like Presley. So you deal with what you got. You know, that's what Council is doing right now. I know that the front office is doing everything they can to go out there and get more pitchers, but every team's going through the same thing right now. It's just like, you know, we're almost a third of the way through the season and people are losing players left and right, and they don't have the answers in their own farm system.
Bruce, we do a lot of projecting here, and I know it may be premature, but if Shota Imanaga does return, oh, by mid-June, and you're looking at this rotation, does Cade Horton stay in it? And could you envision, if that's the case, Ben Brown going to the bullpen? And does that make his next start, maybe his next couple starts, critical for him to show something to worth that says he's worth keeping in the rotation?
David, I'm sure that's what they're talking about. I mean, again, you know, Brown has the great fastball. He's got a wonderful knuckle curve that he usually gets over for a strike. But, you know, the inconsistency, and can you live with a guy that, you know, sometimes it's six innings and the other times it's 3 2/3, 4 innings and 90 pitches. You know, can you live with that? Is a better version of Ben Brown in the back end of the bullpen helping you close out games, maybe 2 to 3 times a week throwing a couple innings, is that the best version? Or, you know, are you really going to need more starting pitching rather than less? So I don't know if there's any answers in the minor leagues. You know, I don't know if Wicks is going to be a part of that equation at all, whether they've decided he's not ready to be a part of that. But, you know, when you look at trades, and we've been talking about trades with the Cubs for a month already, and you know, again, nobody's willing to make that move right now.
Yeah, you know, I think that that just for a night, they got exactly what they needed, right? They just got – it wasn't a great dominant performance. You know, Kyle Tucker seems to be, you know, second straight three-hit game, seems like he's okay again. And I know he's DHing, so, you know, he must be dealing with some kind of a physical issue because that's happened now the last couple games. But he does very well for himself, gets the home run, and then is part of the run score in the eighth inning that wins the game. So, you know, I think you heard the manager after the game, Craig Counsell, saying that he supplied the offense. So you got the offense, you got the save, and you move on to another game. I think it's a lot easier when they're scoring 8 or 10 runs if they can continue to do that. And I don't know what to expect, frankly, in Cincinnati. I think that they'll get some good pitching performances because those guys have been pretty good. But maybe until Sunday, you might be scratching your head a little.
Well, let's examine the Tucker thing. First of all, he's played every game. He banged into the wall pretty good a couple of games ago. But the idea here is you saw and we saw a player that had been worn down, you know, a guy that was in a slump for about 2 weeks here, still getting his walks, still giving you professional at-bats, not giving you the power that he had, but He hadn't missed a game all year, right? He had DH'd twice up until Miami all year. The rest of the time he was in the outfield. You know, the guy needed some time off, and Council couldn't afford it to do that because he had Happ on the IL. He didn't want to use Bruján out there as a starter. So from the perspective of all that, I would say that this is a really good thing. 2 days in a row for DH for Tucker, and then a day off, right? So it's basically, it's 3 days off from the field, which I think is going to go a long way for them. Regardless of how great PCA has been and the rest of the offense doing a fantastic job, this is the number one guy. He's a difference maker. He's made the difference in how the lineup is looked at on a daily basis, batting number two. Nobody in their pregame preparations or their meetings that are playing the Cubs, don't pay attention to Tucker number two and how we're going to navigate throwing to him and make sure that he doesn't beat us. So this is an important guy. Being rested a little bit more here could only help. Just, as far as Cincinnati, I was just going to say that they play him six times, I think, in the next next 10 days. Is that right?
Yes.
So, with that, they were the team most people were concerned about pushing the Cubs this year. So these are big games coming up.
For the sake of conversation, Bruce, Ian Happ, he's not been hot since he came back. PCA batted fourth yesterday, which I think was a curious choice, but I understand because he's had a lot of power and pop at the plate. But is this an evolving thing, the Cubs batting order? It's nothing to worry about because at the rate they score runs, you look at that offense and there's nothing to worry about necessarily. But I'm just curious what you thought of the lineup configuration and how much it would be in a state of flux.
Well, if we don't know it by now, we should be paying attention to the fact that that metrics and that particular day's numbers, how they line up against this particular hitter and this particular team, is a big part of what Craig Counsell does, right? So he is an old school type manager in some ways, and others, he's as modern as you get as far as looking at numbers, matching up, and making his lineup. He's not married to a one lineup. We've seen it. I mean, how many times have we seen a different cleanup hitter? How many times have we seen him pinch hit for his cleanup hitter in the fourth or fifth inning because the matchup says, you know, two men on, close game, and I need Turner here instead of Bush, right? So we've seen all of that, and that's the thing. Pay attention to Craig Counsell. Watch him work on a daily basis. You know he spends an awful lot of time making his lineup, and I don't think there's any way to predict how he's going to use it unless we're sitting there in those meetings.
Yeah, I think that the lineup is kind of solving its own problems. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like you see it, you know, I get it. Ian Happ hasn't played. You know, he comes back from the injury, and he doesn't get many hits. He had one hit over the two games. You get a day off, and then you go to Cincinnati. He's got, like, the magic touch, right? He's Midas in Cincinnati, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he's always had great numbers in Cincinnati. Obviously, went to school there. So that's a must. But, yeah, you're right. He hasn't looked ready. I mean, is that fair to say that he came off the IL – and he was rusty. You know, he'd missed 10 days and just didn't look like himself at bat for sure. He looked a tad behind in the field. Okay, you know, maybe one ball that he normally would have gotten because we've been spoiled by how good he's been in left field for the last 3 or 4 years. But again, perfection, I think, is not necessary. They know how to win. They're learning how to win in different ways. And it should be a good team all year long. I think the angst at third base might be won't be in our conversation very often right now because Shaw has played good baseball since he's come back, been okay in the field and certainly at bat. So again, there's a lot of fortification on this team. My concern mostly is the bullpen and the starting pitching. That's where it's at. The starting pitching has been good. Is it deep enough? We're going to find out. I know they don't think so, and they'll be out there looking.
What did you learn about Matt Shaw in this three-game series in which he had five hits and a key stolen base?
Just that he's a professional player and that he's a good young player. He's going to have bumps in the road. There's going to be games where he doesn't hit, games where he'll be overmatched. But I think he's a quick learner, and he's a talented player. I don't think they're – The projection of him being one of the top players, if not the top position player in the minor leagues for the Cubs, was right. And he'll continue to get better. He believes in himself. I know they believe in him. And just a couple of these little moves that they made with him offensively to clean up the mechanics a little bit, I think it worked out. Now, does that mean he's going to hit 300 and dominate that position. You know, I'm not saying that, but I think he can be a competent third baseman. They certainly did not have any answers within the 26-man roster while he was away.
You mentioned earlier, Bruce, that the Cincinnati has been the team that you looked at and you thought, kind of young team on the come, that's the team you might have to worry about. Do you still feel that way? I mean, obviously St. Louis has played better baseball and has closed the margin. We know the Brewers have won the division 2 years running. Where will the greatest challenge in the division come from, in your opinion?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm really not, because I didn't have the Cardinals playing baseball like they've been playing, right?
Yeah.
I doubt anybody had. And Cincinnati was a team people looked at. Milwaukee had lost their shortstop, well, one of their top starting pitchers, you know, so a lot of people weren't picking them. The Cubs were being picked, but the Cubs weren't necessarily being picked as the best team in the National League, only in their division. I think it's going to be a really good race all the way, and I believe that the front office is going to try to do their best to add more to this team. That's the one thing that the Cubs have that the other teams don't necessarily have. Cincinnati has been talking a lot about Luis Robert since spring training and early in the year. They can't afford to make an economic mistake because of their marketplace. So $20 million to pay for his salary this year would be a huge amount of money to go into it. And therefore, they've been unsure about that. And that fact that he hasn't hit, you know, I mean, you know, are you spending that money on a guy that you hope hits, comes back to being the player he was 2 years ago, but are pretty unsure that that's going to happen.
Bruce, we've got to let you go, but will you promise me something moving forward? And I will remind you of this moving forward. Next time you get a spare moment alone with Kate Horton in the Cub clubhouse, could you ask him if he had a relationship or is aware of Caleb Williams when they were at Oklahoma, both as quarterbacks?
Well, I'm going to have to charge you more. Is that all right, David?
That's fine. Okay. I'm curious. No,
happy to do it and look forward to it. Really nice young man, and I think he'll be sure to want to get in the middle of the controversy.
Great stuff, no Bruce. Thank
all right,
you,
guys.
Buddy.
Thanks,
have
Bruce.
A great day.
No controversy, just connection.
Yeah.
I'm all about connections.
Okay. Okay.
It could be a good connection.
You know, it would be great as if he was like, oh, my God, let me tell you a story. And there you go.
You never know.
What you don't want to hear is, no, never met him.
Don't know until you ask, though. You don't know until you ask. All right.
It's Foley and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Halliburton, he'll take it, he'll backpedal, a three for the win, and goal! Oh! He got it!
I knew, it's going in, you know, it just felt like I got stuck up there though, you know, and honestly, when it like went in, I thought my eyes might have been deceiving me in the moment. But it felt good when it left my hand. So, you know, I thought it was going to go in, and, you know, the ball felt like it was up there for eternity, but, man, just a special moment.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That's Tyrese Halliburton. And I gotta tell you, man, I mean, that ball went in.
It went in.
And that's all that matters.
It is.
But, you know,
it was close.
Well,
so close.
First of all, he's like driving in the lane. The ball gets tipped. He dribbles backward. Unfortunately, his toe was on the line.
He thought it was a three, though. He consciously went for the three and the win.
Yes, he did. But, I mean, that thing hits the back of the rim, and it goes straight up. You don't see that happen. That ball could have bounced in 1,000 different directions. It goes straight up, and just comes right down through the net. And then, you know, bedlam for...
He thinks they won.
Yes.
He does the choke sign.
He does the choke
sign. A la Reggie Miller, 1994 to Spike Lee.
Yes.
Reggie Miller courtside, by the way. That was Reggie Miller you heard laughing.
Reggie's doing the game.
Yes.
And then, you know, the Knicks fans, I don't know if you're following... They throw garbage at people.
I do follow.
Literally garbage.
I was surprised that Reggie leaned into that.
They threw garbage as much as he did. Brian Windhorst. All he's ever done is promote LeBron. How could you throw garbage at
the man? If you're a Knicks fan, how bothered are you or how affected are you by watching the game in your favorite team and Reggie Miller, former nemesis,
is doing the game?
Doing the game. And now he's terrific. You know, I like Reggie Miller. Big fan.
Oh, you're like Mr. Pacer.
Well,
he's an Indiana boy.
Okay, but I like Reggie Miller. I have a ton of respect for him. But I could see why a Knicks fan would not want that at all. Watch with the volume down.
I'm surprised that we haven't heard more vitriol
about that?
From Knicks fans about Reggie Miller. Is it Spike's fault? Is that what we've decided?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. But like, on the back page of the New York Post this morning, you have Reggie Miller from 1994 with the choke sign in a little picture, and you have the big picture of Halliburton doing the same thing last night to the Garden fans, and the headline, Choke 2.0.
There is a statistic out there. That's like the second or third time that the Pacers have won in the final 2 minutes of a game, or final minute when they've been down by seven or more points or something, and it hadn't been done in over 1,000 NBA games.
It's incredible what they came back from.
It's unbelievable.
9 points down with a minute to go in regulation.
Unbelievable.
And then they were down at the beginning of overtime. Jalen Brunson, Mr. Clutch, he's Clutch Player of the Year in the NBA, did not finish strong. I know he had more than 40 points, but his ball handling down the stretch left a lot to be desired.
Brunson and the big man both scored over 35 points. The first time Knicks teammates scored more than 35.
They were great.
But they
wouldn't be there. But
they get to the end of the game.
They didn't execute.
No. And you know, I got to tell you, everyone wants to compare what the Knicks did to Boston to what the Pacers did to the Knicks. It's really not the same thing. Boston literally gave the game away. Stopped shooting, stopped playing basketball, just started jacking up threes that they couldn't hit. It was Boston that kind of gave that game away. That was much more the Pacers taking the game
the
away.
The Pacers did. They seized the opportunity. Rick Carlisle, one of the best coaches in the league, that goes without saying. He's got an NBA title for a reason. It was a long time ago, but he's still a championship coach. And Tom Thibodeau certainly is a great coach in his own right. It's going to be a terrific series. I think it goes seven, but the Pacers are in a very good spot right now after stealing it away from the Knicks down the stretch.
Did you hear what Tibbs said afterward? He said that you've got to turn disappointment to determination. Like, it was just such a Tibbs kind of reaction.
I love all his reactions.
I love that guy.
I do.
Because Friday night's game now is, I mean... You know, tonight will be very interesting to see if OKC can, you know, we saw.
I think they go up 2-0.
Shea Gilgeous-Alexander become the MVP.
SGO, SGA.
Not a surprise.
No, because, Jokic had a kind of season where he could have won it too. But this was SGA's time.
But people get tired of the same guy being able to win the...
Would have been his fourth.
It would have been his fourth. So they gave it to the new guy. And guess what?
He earned it.
They won the game.
Yeah.
They won game seven. He played great in game seven to eliminate the Nuggets. And then they come out and they look like they are significantly better than the Timberwolves. We'll find out
they
a lot
tonight. They look dominant.
Yeah.
Defensively, offensively, they do whatever they want. Alex Caruso playing a big role in that team. All they needed to do was get rid of Josh Giddey, and they look like a championship team.
They need Alex Caruso, Minnesota does, to try to guard Gilgeous-Alexander because that guy—
He's unguardable.
He gets to the free throw line if he doesn't score.
Unguardable.
I mean, he's just unbelievable. You know, what's his name? Did a good job on him, but he picked up five fouls and eventually fouled out. I mean, he can't do that either. Great player. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on the NBA Finals. Should be the Eastern Conference.
Should be a lot of fun. Both sides. Yep.
Tonight. Yeah. Mully and Haw will be right back with our guy, Gordon Whitmire. How about that? We'll preview the Cubs in Cincinnati. Mully and Haw on the Score.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.